How's it hanging, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team, Pokemon Trading Card Games from your podcasting duo. My name is Riley Holbert, joined as always by my good friend, Mr. JW Crewall. Andrew cannot join us today, but he's with us in our hearts. JW, how's it going on your end?
It's been a whirlwind. I just got back from the Orlando Regional Championships this morning. I was hoping to get back Sunday evening, but Spirit pushed my flight, which meant I had to wake up at 3 today and catch a flight at 5 to get back by 8. And then I had a full day of parenting and household chores. I was working out in the sun. My wife made me work out in the sun today because we got to do the porch and we got to do the lawn and all this stuff to get ready for renting out our house because we're moving to New Jersey, if you haven't heard.
Did you put on sunscreen before you went out in the sun and did all that manual labor?
I actually didn't get burned as much as I thought I would. I'm a little red. Didn't. No, dude, no.
Dude, sunscreen's super important.
Yeah, I was only out there for like 3 hours.
That's so long. You gotta put on sunscreen, man.
I know. I just don't think about it.
I know.
It's like I feel like I can store up. Because I stay inside. I try to stay inside. I'm like a little vampire. I try to stay inside as much as I possibly can. Only
doesn't
venturing
that make you
outside.
More vulnerable. To... It's not like you're storing up resistance.
Well, that's
to
what
the
I'm
sun.
Saying. I'm like, you know, I'm my cells are you know, sun resistant, UV ray resistant.
Because no, I'm I feel like they're more vulnerable because they've harvesting. Never experienced the sun.
No, I get plenty of light from the two computer screens that I stare at.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, plus the phone screen, yeah.
Oh, dude, yeah, it's just screen after screen after screen. So I do feel like I get plenty of light. So I am adjusted, just not much to outdoors.
Man, listeners at home, please wear your sunscreen. Don't be like JW.
Okay, I'm not a doctor, okay?
Oh, yeah, understood.
That's pretty apparent, yeah. But how are you, Riley?
I'm good. Yeah, it was a beautiful weekend here, Matt, so got to enjoy that. Got to go to the farmer's market and play some tennis with some of my friends over the weekend, so that was lots of fun. I've been pretty busy lately at work, but, you know, keeps you on your toes. And, yeah, overall, I think things are going pretty well. The stash has debuted as a hit, so mm-hmm. We're going to keep the trial period going for a little longer.
Let's go.
Yeah, no complaints from my end, really.
It's awesome, dude. Yeah, you're looking great.
Thank you. And I got to watch the Orlando Regional Championship from the comfort of my home, which is was a blast too. You know,
it was wild. As the as the only representative, the only boots on the ground representative from Tag Team, this felt like the biggest regional of all time. I mean, it was just unreal. It was ridiculous trying to get to your seat.
Yeah, I bet.
During a round, just, you know, I never experienced something like this before. You know, certainly in those first couple rounds before players had started to, you know, drop from the tournament, it was congested. And Christopher was the head judge or the organizer, whatever the official title is. But he keeps a pretty tight clock. So you're trying to organize 2,000 players to get to their seats and... Obviously, it's the largest regional, so it takes quite a while. And then, boom, like you sit down, and then the clock starts. And
it's time,
like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild.
That's like, it's one of the weirdest like juxtapositions, I guess, at these regionals right now, is I feel like the between rounds can take a while sometimes. And then as soon as they announce the pairings, like you have to be in that seat and sat.
Yeah, you really need good internet for these things. Because and I know a lot question. Of people didn't have a lot of people didn't have great internet for Orlando just based on the different providers. I was, you know, average, I would say. You know, I'd get pairings up after a couple minutes, but I know some other people didn't have as much luck there.
Yeah, that's my number one complaint at the Excel Center in London is the Wi-Fi and the cell connectivity is so bad, and it like. When you're working on those thin margins to get to your seats,
yep,
it's brutal, man.
Yep.
Well, hopefully you weren't struck by the seat demon along the way for your tournament.
No, I was not.
That's all good. Well, about the kind of broader scale of the tournament, of course. But JW, as the only boots on the ground representative, how did Orlando go?
Well, it was really funny because I'll just start with this portion of it because this is always kind of a side anecdote. Whenever Pokemon tournaments share the convention hall, it's always with, or it seems like it's always with, a cheerleading competition. And that was what happened in Orlando. However, this cheerleading competition affected the tournament in significant ways.
That's like, that was cheerleading worlds, actually, wasn't it?
It was something crazy, dude. I don't know what was going on, but it was loud, bombastic. I sit down for my round two, and I'm like, is somebody's phone going off? Because I hear a very faint, like very faint in the background, you know, I've been afraid of changing because I built my life around. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm hearing this, you know, the Fleetwood Mac song, which is very faintly, like somebody has to have their, you know, ringtone on or playing it on
their
phone.
Was it like a routine next door?
It was a routine, bro. It was a routine next door. Because then immediately they get done with that set or that phrase. And then it goes into just like, duh, 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 some like, you know, 2000s, 2010s, you know, pop or, you know, whatever it was. And just like this driving beat. And it just was so loud. And this was maybe a couple of halls down, but you could just hear it because that's a cheerleading competition, right? You got to have the big, loud energy music. And so, you know, you wouldn't expect them necessarily to turn it down because we got Pokemon players in the hall next door. But I really would feel like for anyone that has a, like an auditory sensory overload issues, that must have been a terrible tournament to play because it was pretty constant through those middle rounds.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I wonder if my sister was there. She's got a cheer. I know she's a cheerleading competition in Orlando in April. I think it's later though. I want to say it's in like a week or two.
I mean, I'm sure it's a popular destination for
cheerleading competitions.
Cheerleading competitions, yeah. And yeah, it's always funny too because it's funny too because you have the juxtaposition of cheerleaders and Pokemon players, and both parties are walking by each other and looking at the other one like they're the craziest person in the world. You know, it's like you have these cheerleaders and they have the high buns and they look like little clones of each other, and they're all walking by and like they're kind of smirking and smiling and they got all the eye glitter and you know, you can tell that they're going to be talking about it in their group chats and in their hotel rooms later that night. And then you got the Pokemon players lumbering across and they're like looking at like, what are these cheerleaders? How could they wear that in public? Kind of vibe. It's just so fun. Yeah. What an experience.
I think my top tier of like shared convention center space is always the multi-level marketing schemes. those are always going to be my favorites.
There may have been one. I think I saw.
Oh, there was also a multi-level marketing scheme.
Well, I saw some. I saw some setup for a beauty product, like a Vena or okay. Something. I don't know. I forget what it was. I can't remember the name, but there were some booths. Either they were setting up at the same time because it's a massive convention center, or they were, you know, the following week or something like that. But
yeah, whatever the one was at NAIC.
Yeah,
that
Ulta.
Was awesome.
Oh, it was Ulta. I think it was Ulta. I don't know. At least it was Ulta in Florida. There was an Ulta Beauty, couple of stands,
that's just a
couple
store,
of displays.
Though.
No, but they had it's like not... Welcome to our 2024 Ulta Beauty, you know, Life is Beauty convention, or I don't know, whatever. It was.
Interesting. So. I feel like that might just be a convention though. Like my favorite is really like the Cutcos of the world, like the, you know, you're the Emerald Elite. Like Cutco seller type of stuff, like that's awesome. Like the one at NAIC was what, the nutrition shake or whatever that they, you know what I'm talking about? The one
I
from
do.
A couple years ago.
Yeah, I do remember this.
Everyone thought everyone else is crazy.
Yeah, well, to some extent, Pokemon players are, but I digress. So let's get into the tournament run. That'll be the first half of the cast, and then we'll take our ad break, and then we will talk about where we go from here. So, I played Dunduns and Dragons, as I like to call the deck, which is Roaring Moon with the Dunsparce. And I played, I will say the deck felt okay, but it didn't really help me very much. And part of that was matchups, and part of that was just me running pretty average. But I finished at 4-3-2. So I kind of walked through a little bit of what I was seeing there. I would say my first round was the one round that was favorable for me, that I felt very confident going into. It was an Arceus deck, Arctina. That was the one round as well that I felt like I ran pretty hot. Was able, there was game two where I got a Prime Catcher in my opening hand. He had an Arceus on the bench, and I was able to Prime Catcher and knock out with a Roaring Moon EX. It was that kind of series where I just kind of had everything to counter whatever he was doing, and he didn't really draw particularly well, and his Judges and Ionos didn't stick. It was a kind of a bloodbath there. Again, the one matchup that I would have said going into the tournament, yes, I'd like to face 9 of these, right? So Arceus first round. Second round, I played a Charizard Bibarel deck. He really didn't set up all too well. I didn't see a Pidgeot, so I think it was Charizard Bibarel, and just not a lot going on there with his early game setup, and I was able to take that pretty swiftly. And then round three, this was where I felt like I made a mistake, but I couldn't have known it was a mistake, but it still ended up a tie in the mirror match. So I had won game one with a donk, and I felt pretty good. I was like, okay, great. You know, I won game one with a donk. We'll have plenty of time for game two and three, and I can hopefully pull out this win. So game two, it gets really long. It's just one of those where, you know, we're counting resources, and we're making sure that, you know, we're trying to play optimally into the strategy that the other player is trying to employ. And I have to make a decision. He goes for an Iron Bundle. Okay. And I have a Roaring Moon with a capsule in the active that he can't knock out. So he's going for the bundle play to, you know, push up either a Pokemon he can knock out or my Roaring Moon EX. Now I have a decision to make, because I think, okay, if I promote the Roaring Moon EX and he knocks it out with his own Roaring Moon EX, I will just lose the prize trade, and that will be like instant loss, right? So I play around that, and I send up a one prizer, which he just knocks out with his only Roaring Moon that has energy attached. What I also thought was that he had three other Roaring Moon, the baby Roaring Moon in the discard pile, and his Super Rod. So he had one Roaring Moon active, and that was his only attacker. And then he had like a Dunsparce on the bench, right? So he had one attacker, his last Roaring Moon, his Super Rod was in the discard pile. And I'm like, okay, if I push up a one prizer, and, you know, he knocks it out, whatever, he goes down to two prizes remaining, and then I take out his Roaring Moon, and I go down to two prizes remaining, then he has to bring up an EX, and I just knock that out. And so that was my thought. And so I take that knockout. He takes the knockout on my Spiritomb. I take the knockout on his Roaring Moon. And then he pulls off a play where I just did not see this coming, with a Thornton to get back another baby Roaring Moon. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me, because I think if I had promoted the EX, he had no way to knock that out. But because I promoted the one prizer, he was able to Thornton into another Roaring Moon and then finish it off with the EX for the last prize. And it was just like, oh, come on, dude. Like, I'm losing to... It was kind of my own bias getting the best of me. Although I couldn't have known that he played Thornton, because the first game was a donk, right? Like, I didn't even see his full list, right? It was kind of a little bit of my hubris of, like, Thornton is a generally underwhelming card, I feel, in most decks. Worked really well for him, and he was able to pull out that win, and then we just didn't have enough time to finish game number three, which was depressing. So then I sit down at the table in round number four, and it's a Lugia, and a very competent Lugia player. And game one, I cheese with the Spiritomb. I played a Tech Spiritomb, so I cheesed with that, and just was able to stifle the setup to the point that I could get that win. And then game number two, he gets double Archeops turn one, and it's just horrible. And then game number three, we don't have enough time to finish. He would probably win had we had more time on the clock, but we don't. He's, you know, has a couple prizes left to take and can't quite get there. So tie that round. So at this point, I'm 202. I face another Lugia in round five at 202. And her deck just doesn't quite get there. Like, there was one time where she starts a Snorlax and just has to manually attach to it because she doesn't find a draw supporter in her opening hand. And there was another game where we played where I got the Spiritomb out, and then, you know, she was like, oh, I'll play Ultra Ball, and she almost takes the Lumineon, but then realizes I have Spiritomb down, and like, okay, she has to make a different play, and it kind of sets her back a little bit. So I am able to win that one, and so I'm 302 and I'm feeling fine, right? I think, okay, I have four rounds to go, and I need to go 3-1, and that's reasonable. I feel okay, although at this point I would say I've had to work for every win. It has not been easy outside of that first round. Like, it has it has been some of the hardest that I've had to work for, you know, majority of these games. It really just hasn't, the deck hasn't been flowing. I haven't been feeling good in terms of my draws. I've been getting a lot of Roaring Moon EX starts and not being able to follow it up with a Sada on the second turn, so I'm like unable to attack. And there are games where I have to like manually retreat so that I can get into a baby. It's like really ugly, some of these plays that I have to make to try to squeak out these games. And then round number six, it all kind of comes to a head. And I was playing against a Canadian player named Daniel, and I do just want to offer an apology to Daniel, because I feel like I was not the most gracious loser after this.
Oh no, Daniel.
It wasn't like that. He was a great dude. He was probably like the friendliest guy that I played. Obviously, you know, Canadian, of course, right? He was probably the friendliest guy that I played the entire day. Really great guy. Super nice the whole time. But it was one of those where like I could not catch a single break, and I'm like, I have him on the ropes multiple times in both games. If I can just draw that one card. There was a time in the first game where he had a single Roaring Moon EX, and he dead draws a couple of turns, but I also have a Roaring Moon EX in the active, and I just can't find Sada, and I prized my Greninja. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. And he stabilizes just a little bit, opens a door, takes a knockout, and just steamrolls me from there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you have to be kidding. I'm like one Sada away from a donk in that first game, and I just can't find it. And I'm like, whatever, we'll push it out, we'll go to game two. And then it's a similar thing where it's just I'm looking for attackers and I can't find them, and I do one Explorer's Guidance, and I'm like, okay, if I can find one Dunsparce, then I'm in an okay position, because then I can get the Dunsparce down, and then I at least have a pivot, right? And my hand is big enough that I could pull together an attacker no matter what happens. So I play the Guidance, and I draw my top six. I'm looking for Artisan, Dunsparce, Ultra Ball, Nest Ball, any card, and I look at my six, and it's just the worst, like, the worst six cards that I could have drawn.
No.
Really nothing playable. No dark patches, like, so I could preemptively set up an attacker. No Dunsparces, no ways to search out. It was horrible. And I'm, you know, at this point I'm like audibly like exasperated. Like, I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, I think I just say that. Like, I'm just like, I can't believe that this is what's happening at this point in the tournament. And so I end up losing that 2-0. You know, super great guy. Nothing against Daniel, bro. You're a great dude, man. But I just got salty. I was really salty, because it was those little things where it's like, okay, well, if I get this one card, then I'll be totally fine.
Yeah.
You know, and it just never happened. And it was like, oh my gosh. So I know exactly what I
It's frustrating. Do. It really is.
But it's fine. Whatever. So we shake it off, because we're still in contention. We can still win the next three. And I've done worse to make a day two. I play against Ryan Sablehouse in round seven, which I don't know that we've ever played, but I was able to beat him 2-0. He had some pretty poor draws, and I was able to stunt a little bit, which was nice. A couple early game prime catchers in both games really put me ahead in the prize trade to a degree that he couldn't really come back from. And then in round number eight, play against another really nice guy, Cody. And I get a little bit in my own head with this one. He's before the match, he's like, oh, you know, sorry to do this to you, man. Sorry to do this to you, man. And I'm like, oh, shoot. You know, he's playing a control deck. That's what's going through my mind. I'm like, oh, shoot. He's playing like some kind of control deck. Like, I need to be on the top of my game. Don't overbench. Don't do anything weird. And so I'm playing the whole first game like he's playing some kind of control deck, because what he goes is like Pidgey. He plays the Hero's Cape. And then he, like, benches a Charmander. So I'm like, okay, yeah, this is some kind of funky control deck, right? I don't know. Because sure, he's like, yeah. Oh, sorry to do that. You know, I hate to do this to you, man. And I'm like, ah. And so I get in my own head a little bit. And, you know, I don't go for the Greninja because I don't want to have a liability that can be stalled. And I just play in a way that I could have, if I had known from the first game that it was just a standard Charizard deck with Hero's Cape, I would have played differently, right? But I don't, and I lose game one just pretty handily. And then I don't draw very well in game two, and I lose that series. So that puts me out of contention. To add insult to injury, I play out my last round because I got a little bit of pride. 5-2-2 at the largest regional of all time. I don't know. I'm there. It's one more round. Yeah, why not?
What's the harm?
Maybe I'll meet a fan or something. I don't know. But
yeah, if you're already in all the way to round eight, like... Might as well,
who cares? And so I sit down against a player that I had played before in a GLC tournament, actually, and he's like, all right, good luck. And we flip over our cards, and he flips over a Flittle, and he's playing a spot throw.
Your arch nemesis.
Yep. And I just get smoked in game one. I actually win game two, which is crazy. I build up three Roaring Moons, I think. No, I build up two Roaring Moons with four energy each, and then I get, you know, a couple of Gust knockouts or something. So I win game two, and I'm like, I don't know, I could be in this, right? If he just dead draws in game three, I could win this one. And, you know, he doesn't, which I wouldn't expect necessarily, but I just get absolutely smoked in game number three, so... That was my tournament. It was a humbling 4-3-2, my first missed day two of the season, with a deck that didn't really help me out a lot. You know, there were many times we talked about that round six loss where it felt like I was just one card away. One, you know, if only there was a card that had an ability that allowed me to search for any card in my deck, man, that might have been really nice to play a deck like that. I don't know if any exist. But it always just felt like I was one card away from the combo, one card away from really putting my opponent in a bad position. And the matchups certainly didn't help. So to recap, played that Arceus round one, went, you know, 1-0 against Arceus, played two Charizard decks, went 1-1 against the two Charizard decks, played two Lugia decks, went 1-0-1 against the Lugia decks, and then played three Mirrors going 1-1-1. So it was like a very mid performance. I wasn't able to capitalize on any mistakes that my opponents made, really, you know, do much at all. It was pretty average, pretty average performance with what I would consider to be, after playing it for nine rounds, a pretty average deck.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, three Mirrors is tough. You know, we expected the deck to be popular, especially in day one, but three Mirrors is tough, especially with a deck like that, you know.
Yeah, because of course you're going to at least play two, you know, two pretty full games and probably get to that third. So, yeah, just really rough.
Well, Daniel did make day two. If it makes you feel any better, he went on to make it.
Yeah, he did. I was happy. I was when I saw that, I was like, yeah, man, good for you. Like, I was trying to scout him out at the at the convention center, be like, hey, man, sorry about that.
yeah, I've been there, man. I feel so guilty after moments like that.
Hey, I'm but a mere mortal.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, sorry about your run, but you know, at least you got to go to Orlando, have some fun. Was Mickey Mouse there? Did you get to see him?
I did not. Surprisingly, no one dressed up as Mickey Mouse or cosplayed as Mickey Mouse, or the mascot did not come into the event hall, which was pretty depressing, gotta say. I actually didn't even see anyone wear ears.
not even public domain black and white Steamboat Willie Mickey Mouse is there?
No.
Dang, man. What's the point?
I know it's tough.
What's the point? Well, kudos for going, and hopefully it was fun, regardless of a final outcome. I can't complain too much about being in Orlando, I guess, for a weekend. So.
No, it was a really nice time, and I got to catch up with, ironically, some of the local players that I don't play too much with. And I will say this, the support, maybe it was just due to how many players were there, but it seemed like every round there were a couple people coming up to me, hey, you know, listen to the podcast, or love your content, or, you know, took the masterclass, or... You know, we did a coaching session together. There was just a lot of support from the community, and that was really special. This one felt, for some reason, a little bit different than some of the other tournaments, where there was just a lot of players that that came up and said hey, and that was really quite a nice feeling. Got to talk to a lot of players that, in some way, I've impacted, which was cool. So, shout out to you guys.
That's awesome.
Appreciate it.
Shout out, listeners. We love you guys. Awesome. Well, before we go and talk about the meta at large, why don't we go ahead and take a few seconds to thank our sponsor for this week's episode. Of course, we're talking about Manscaped. JW, why don't you tell us a little bit about Manscaped?
Manscaped is the number one men's grooming company, and they have everything that you could ever want to shave and keep your down there hairs all nice and trim and feeling fresh. So I, of course, packed my ear and nose hair trimmer on the trip down to Orlando. Used that. Used my boxers. First time, they didn't work. So I don't know. Our claims of having a higher probability of making day two, I mean, I think they still hold true. First time this season that they didn't work. But I did feel very comfortable wearing them for the course of... the weekend. I didn't wear the same pair, of course. I have multiple pairs, which I would recommend you do as well. Have multiple
pairs. Worthy investment.
Yeah, worthy investment, absolutely. So, fantastic products. We can't say enough about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Manscaped products are seriously awesome. I know after this, I'm going to go and touch up my beard with the Beard Hedger. Let's make sure that my mustache is on full display. And if you're looking to get Manscaped products for yourself or a loved one, great news is we have a discount code for you. So if you head on over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout, TAGTEAM. You'll get not only 20% off, but free shipping. It's a great deal. Get rid of that shipping and take a hefty chunk off your total. Help support the podcast. Get some cool stuff for you or a loved one. I mean, that's pretty much as good as it can be. So again, head on over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout for 20% off and free shipping. And thank you so much to Manscaped for their continued support of the cast. Okay, so breaking down Orlando, I have to admit, JW, if you've been following the Twitter scene leading up to Orlando, the outcome was a major chef's kiss moment.
walk us through this.
So... Monday after EUIC, it might have even been the Sunday, dare I say, very closely proximate to the completion of EUIC, Liam Halliburton goes onto Twitter and says, if you stink at the Pokemon trading card game, just copy a player's list who's better than you. I, for one, will be playing towards 60 at Orlando. Now, he did puff his chest a little bit there. He did change one card, but Liam rolled up with Torres 60 to Orlando, and not only did he go 9-0 on day one, but he won the entire tournament after making that insane series of tweets. He's also was tweeting about how, you know, if anything doesn't go your way at any point, like, it's because you don't want it enough.
yeah, very much like this sports.
He was like building up, like he was like a heel,
right?
Almost.
Right.
He's being like a heel character.
Yeah, and it's good. Sure enough, we need more enemies. We need more enemies here.
I loved it. I loved his tweets leading up to the tournament. I love that he won with exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yeah,
I mean, it really doesn't get better than that in my books. That's a storyline right there.
That is a real storyline. It is funny to go back and review some tweets. Liam definitely has a little bit of a, what would you say, renegade, rogue kind of mentality, I would say. The heel would be a good kind of archetype for how Liam posts sometimes. But, you know, great win for him, and just a really fantastic play. Whenever I had a chance, I was, you know, sniffing around the tables and checking them out, checking out all the top players there in day two. Obviously, watching the stream matches, he just played really clean. And so congrats to him for that big win in Orlando.
Yeah, Liam and I played for the first time shortly after he aged up back at the Lugia dominated Arlington Regional. Remember that?
Oh,
Liam and I played deep into day two in that event, and he was an awesome opponent. He's a fun guy, you know, not nearly as toxic as his tweets might indicate.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like I think you know, there's an online, like, a bit, persona. You know? Yeah, it's a bit. Right, it's a bit.
It's a bit. So I was happy to see him climbing up at the tables. I'm genuinely, like, I like Liam. I'm a Liam fan. So that was a lot of fun.
This was, yeah. I will say, this was one of the more unusual top eights that I feel like I've seen in recent memory, because you have a lot of these players that, you know, we know are good, you know, in that, you know, certainly above average play, like a lot of above average players, but not a lot of players that have that, you know, that big pedigree, you know, in the Masters division even. But, yeah, you know, Josh Frank is a player that's been chasing his kind of spike finish and gets it here. You know, Reagan obviously is a great player. Jake here, Luke Morsa, again, another player that, you know, many of us respect in the community, but looking for his big break and, you know, gets it here at the biggest regional of all time. Cyrus McCain, Brandon Dean, Fabrizio Ingo Silva has another great finish. So it was just a really interesting top eight.
Because it was, yeah.
You don't. It wasn't really a. I had been touting the formats of this year as like, okay, you're seeing these top eights with big name brand players, and this didn't quite match up to, you know, even the top eight of EUIC, for instance.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. It was like great to see these kind of you know, players get that deep finish that they have been looking for a while.
It was definitely an interestingly composed top eight, both in terms of, like, the players, a lot of folks, like, kind of breakout performance or their first big break in a while. Also just the amount of varied decks was really interesting. We had two Chien Paos and two Charizards, and the rest of the decks were kind of all over the place. You know, we had Giratina, we had Roarmoon, did Unsparce, we had Ancient Box, we had Gardevoir. So a lot of, like, interesting stuff going on. Cal Connor also bubbling with Gardevoir. So Gardevoir, honestly, like, kind of making a showing, kind of making a point for itself here in Day 2 Orlando. So really, just interesting tournament. Also, multiple Arceus Giratinas almost making that top eight, right, which I don't think a lot of people would have predicted going into this tournament. I mean, what is the fallout of this going to look like? I will say, one thing I did a deep dive on before the cast is I wanted to see how many people pulled the Liam maneuver, right? Like, played almost exactly towards 60 cards. And it's a pretty substantial number. I didn't, like, actually count or keep track, but over half, I would say, of the Charizard Pidgeots are playing something along that structure. And a vast majority of, like, the top 32, top 64 are also along that structure.
Yeah.
So it seems like the tour method is here to stay. And it kind of makes sense, too. It's a really solid
basis. Well, I think as I continue to think about Charizard Pidgeot, there's a number of things I want to say about the deck that have been revealed to me in recent weeks, but specifically, you know, again, the EUIC winning list is that a lot of the cards, and this is a general principle that I think top players tend to gravitate toward, but it bears repeating, is that a lot of the cards in the deck have multi-purpose use. And what I mean by that is, like, let's take, for example, the Ace spec. Many players came into this format thinking Maximum Belt would be a quality choice for Charizard. because in the mirror, you don't have to get down to a single prize remaining to be able to take a one-shot knockout on your opponent's Charizard. Against Chenpao, you can get up to those higher numbers. Maybe even against Arceus decks, you know, you can hit those bigger numbers. Wow. Well, wait, no, not against the Arceus decks. What am I talking about?
It's only if they have like some EX attacker.
Yeah, I don't know. anything with a... Why did I say the
Arceus? There's a point there. Any
Pidgeot deck, right? You could hit, for the Pidgeot knockout. My old age there.
Pidgeot had two prizes. Yeah, screw it.
Yeah, whatever. So you have that kind of thought, but you know, really, when you look at the scope of that, it's there are other cards that can do that same thing, namely Defiance Band. There's a little more finagling. It's a little bit of a weaker card. Otherwise, no one would really even consider Maxwell Belt. But there are cards that you can put yourself in a situation to do something similar, right? Whereas, you know, Torrid with his list, kind of. In Prime Catcher over, and this is just one example, but that is a much more versatile card than the Maximum Bell, which is only really good in certain specific situations, in certain prize trades, whereas Prime Catcher could be very good throughout the course of the game for multiple different uses. It could be good in the early game if you want to switch into a Kleffa, but you don't have an energy to retreat your active Pokemon, whatever you started. Or it could be good to set up a mid-game play where you knock out their Bibarel or Pidgeot or whatever their setup Pokemon is, and then Iono and take away their hand and their draw on the same turn. So it has these multi-purpose uses, and I feel like that's where this Torrid build is maybe a little bit superior to some of the other builds that have been tried in this format, and I think that's why you're seeing more players gravitate towards that style.
Yeah, the Prime Catcher is just really, really solid. Even just looking down at the William Azevedo, he made just top four in UIC. He was over in Orlando as well. He played the Maximum Bell at UIC and pivoted with his traditional Pidgeot build, no Bibarel. He still pivoted to playing that Prime Catcher, you know. So he, another top player, one of the innovators of Charizard Pidgeot in the first place. You know, it seems like we're kind of circling the drain on this. I would even make the argument that Hero's Cape might be a more versatile and useful card in a more generic sense than the Maximum Belt is. Really, to me, Maximum Belt's prime use case is being able to like swing aggressively into Chenpao, and I don't even know if that's necessary all of the time.
Right.
You know, like it's good for sure. And Chenpao did have a better showing here than it did in EUIC, but I mean, the Charizard still overcame it with or without the Maximum Belt. Neither top eight Charizard build played Maximum Belt. So, yeah. Sorry, Maximum Belt, you're washed.
Yeah, so washed. So washed, for sure. So
maybe
yeah.
When more EXs come out, you know.
That's a good point, right? You could certainly, there have been points in time where different Ace specs were much better, significantly better. I mean, I've been thinking about Scoop Up Cyclone, right? Think about that in Charizard. That seems pretty good as well.
Recently announced Scoop Up Cyclone.
You know, so there could be a point in time where as the format shifts and as different decks rise and fall, you know, we may see different shifts in what a spec is kind of commonly thought of as the best one. I think generally players are coming to agreement, at least it seems with results from this second tournament in the new format, that Prime Catcher is better. We'll have to wait until Indy, wait until we have some more of these results to pour in from online tournaments to really get a sense of that shift, but certainly seems that that's trending up right now. Now, you bring up the other big deck from the tournament. I think the surprise for us in Chenpao, and I want to elaborate on why Chenpao did well here as opposed to EUIC, and I think the primary reason is that we see a Charizard deck that can handle stall. You think a lot of players will pivot to that build, which they did end up doing, and now stall is maybe a worse play, ergo the one practically auto loss matchup for the Chenpao deck is eradicated from the field. So the dominance of Chenpao here at Orlando is very interesting to me. Riley, what are your takes on that?
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair evaluation of what happened there. I still kind of think Chenpao is below the curve for where it needs to be. I don't think it's as reliable of a Charizard counter as it needs to be, and I don't love its matchups in general It just feels like a little bit clunky of a deck. But, you know, it's got merit to it. And I think when firing on all cylinders, Chen Pao is one of the decks that can handle Charizard firing on all cylinders. You know, it can really get down to those final margins. So, you know, it makes sense. I can understand why players like Reagan would have gravitated towards it. I probably am sworn off Chen Pao for good after my horrifying and traumatizing experience at UIC. But, you know, major kudos to anyone. I do think you're spot on, though, and that stall has been kind of eradicated. I mean, you scroll through the limit list for day two at Orlando. It's bleak for stall. It really is. And I think when you're losing Charizard as kind of a prime matchup, you know, what's the point? Right. You know, what's the point of playing stall if you auto lose to the most popular deck and you're losing to Giratinas and you're losing these Arceus decks? Like, yeah. Who are you playing this for? You know, like you open hit 9 Chen Paos. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
You know,
right. Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, so, it is really interesting. It's an interesting place for stall because I think, you know, coming into the format, stall just generally, people respected it a lot. Said sure, this would be a tier one deck. It gets a lot of new tools, and you know, has, at least with the way we were building decks at the start of the format, good matchups into a lot of the big ones. Now, yeah, you're kind of looking at it, you know, Giratina rising again in multiple forms, pretty bad for stall, generally speaking. Got the shred attack, got, you know, maybe Jet Energies in the Arceus build and the Lost Box Giratina build. Just a lot of ways for that deck to navigate around stall. You got Charizard decks now largely teching, you know, building the deck in a way that can handle stall. I mean, you're losing a lot of these, even Gardevoir, right? That's got to be like a horrible matchup for stall too, like just being able to attach a bunch of energy and like snipe with anything that you put down on the field or attack with anything that you put down on the field, like that,
yeah, seems, and they're pretty all bad too. Like naughty X's too,
yeah, for the most part, right? So yeah, just tough out there for our stall heads.
Yeah, I think that's it's a accurate evaluation of where stall is in the metagame. Now if stall can find a way to evolve to that next level to deal with the metagame developments, maybe it could see a resurgence. But it feels like a very hostile existence for stall right now. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, these sort of styles of Charizard deck have proven themselves definitively. You know, I also want to pay lip service to the Perth Regional, also this past weekend, completely dominated as well by Charizard Pidgeot. Most of them playing a B-Barrel version. The major difference is, like, they play an Aleki instead of the Yell's Cheer to recycle stuff, you know, with the electromagnetic sonar attack. So yeah, it's just not a great time to be a stall head, not gonna lie. You know, maybe find alternative routes to winning or maybe more traditional routes to winning,
right,
is actually what we're going for here.
So Ancient Box, let's talk about the ancient cards here for a second. We got Ancient Box and Dungeons and Dragons. Ancient Box getting second, Dungeons and Dragons getting a top 8 finish, and I didn't see quite the conversion for Ancient Box, but I know that the Roaring Moon EX deck did not convert particularly well. Had about 8% in day one players, and then about 5.5% of the day two players. So a pretty significant drop in the representation from day one to day two. But still garnering that top 8 placement. Where are you at with these ancient decks? We saw in that finals, it felt pretty bad for Jake pretty much the entirety of that finals match into Charizard that plays a couple of healing cards. I'm just curious your takes, Riley, on where you feel like the ancient decks, both ancient decks, fit into the metagame right now.
Yeah, I mean, Jake did beat Luke over the in top 8, I believe, if I have the bracket right on my screen right now. So he was able to overcome at least one top placing Charizard. Presumably he played many over the course of the tournament. But when it came down to it and he was on stream versus Liam, it did not look like he really had the stopping power to do it. And Liam didn't even really get to use his healing cards to his full potential. I don't think he hardly healed at all over the course of that match. Like once or twice, maybe. Like he turroed the Rotom at the end of the game, which isn't really healing as much as removing a liability.
Well, sure.
And then he healed, I think, once in game one. And so if that's like all it takes to lose the set, you know, most Charizards can do that much, you know, like, and probably more reliably than Liam did. Like, Liam's deck was hardly working in game two. It was mostly just like top decks and dreams.
Right. So, and willpower.
Like, yeah. Just the willpower he was exerting upon his deck.
He wanted it more for sure.
He definitely did want it more in those finals. And it just takes so much to like get to those one shots. And I feel like with this style of single prize deck, you need to be ramping up to a point where you sort of have checkmate, right? Where like no matter what you do, I'm taking a one shot the next turn with a single prizer. And I feel like it's just not possible to do that reliably on a 330 HP Pokemon EX.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. The biggest weakness there is just achieving those high numbers. Now, you've seen players play Cobalion in their list to try to give you that extra boost. But I'm just not convinced. I think that no matter how you slice it, that matchup is going to be really tough.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, you start slotting Cobalion in, it opens you up more to some of the already existing lose conditions for ancient box decks of like gusting up some random guy and keeping it there. Because they don't really have that many ways to just like retreat a Cobalion over and over. So, yeah, I'm not a huge believer in the ancient box decks. Like, I never have been. I felt a little vindicated, honestly, with like how it was performing in the final stretch there. Like, I genuinely think the Roaring Moon deck runs smoother and cleaner than the traditional ancient box lists, regardless of, you know, kind of final placements on the table here. So, yeah, just not a huge believer on this end. I think Jake did the best he could. But,
came pretty close. I mean, he thought he had it.
He was one card short. He thought he had a game. He was one card short. Yeah, he sure did. But, you know, he's all said and done. Cards on the table. He was one card short. But he never would have been able to get closer, right? Like, with Liam's setup, it was just not possible for him to sweep the game like he was hoping to.
Sure.
And I think that's just, like, that's just the tale with these ancient box decks. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm dead wrong. Like, you know, he beat Charizard. He had to have to get to where he was. But I think in a generic sense, on average, ancient box will not beat Charizard enough of the time to make it worth it.
How are we feeling about Guardi?
Guardi's like the wild card to me.
Yeah, I don't quite get it. That's the one. I mean, granted, I haven't. There's so many decks. You know, you can only put enough time into so many decks. But Guardi is one that I just really haven't touched. Obviously, lost a ton. It might be the most nerfed deck, which maybe makes it all the crazier that more players didn't play it last format, but it was probably the most nerfed deck heading into this new format. And I don't really have a finger on the pulse of where Guardi stands. I mean, we have obviously very skilled players that played a decent amount of Guardi last format, doing well again with it in this new format. But I just don't quite know where it fits in. I mean, having to rely on a tool in the Hero's Cape or the Luxurious Cape is a little bit scary when you're damaging yourself. Of course, you can put yourself in situations where your opponent essentially gets a free prize if they can vacuum it away or some other way remove the tool and really put you in a precarious position. Now, how often that happened to these players and whether or not they had, you know, strategies around that, you know, I don't quite know. But where are we at with Guardi? Is that a deck that you would even consider picking up for, you know, the next regional like Indianapolis?
I mean, it has to have some sort of merit because good players are picking up the deck over and over. I think the fear of the tools being blown away with like vacuums and stuff might just be overblown in the end. You know, it's like clearly they've thought about that, right? Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And I think in real life, like, not that many decks are actually playing Lost Vacuum, basically just Charizard. And against Charizard, they're probably saying, like, hey, I'm going to take a favorable enough prize exchange that it doesn't even matter. You know, like, I can just go crazy with these and take, you know, these 2-for-1 prize knockouts a majority of the game. And one time I can give up the extra prize plus the EX, you know, because Charizard will Lost Vacuum and then gust your Guardi. But I could take that L because I'm going to take 2-for-1 the rest of the game and just out-trade them. like that might just be a viable route to win, you know. And Gardy was lightly favored against Charizard in previous formats too, or at least like hung super close with it. And I mean, it's with the tool on it, it's arguably easier to get up there with like the Drifloon and the Screamtail than it was with the advanced Gardy,
right?
The single prize Gardy. So, I mean, there's obvious merit there, and I think there's just not enough anti-tool stuff for it to really matter that much. You could also make the counter argument, like, you know, if they vacuum your luxurious cape, you're given one prize instead of
yeah,
two.
Yeah, so right. Cares? So it's arguably a better position, right?
It's like
yeah.
water under the bridge.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah, and like maybe it's the hero's cape is like your kind of finishing move.
And there's kind of like there's fun tricks the Gardy deck has sure. as well. Like you can attack with the Mimikyu. So if they're trying to like, you know, knock out the Mimikyu with Manders, for example, yep. like the Mimikyu just knocks out a Charmander every
yeah.
time.
Well, I think Gardy is one of those decks that's going to reward the players that are going to put the most time into it. And yeah. because it's going to have such a... I foresee it. I mean, I don't ever think it'll climb into, like, top five most played or top three most played decks. But there's going to be a small subset of the player base that's going to play Gardy. And so I think a lot of players won't actually have good reps against a good Gardy player just in their testing. Because it can be a little bit more intricate than most decks. And... you know, I think generally the player base will suffer if they're not playing against good players playing that matchup and they're not expecting to see it. And you might just see at these upcoming regionals, Gardy continue to do well because players aren't really prepared for it. And the players that do play Gardy have invested all this time and know all the lines and can make a winnable situation out of, you know, a very bleak board state.
That's definitely valid. I think the other sort of tangential point I would make is you talked about how Gardy was one of the most nerfed decks. And I think when you look at the decks that are still in the metagame, that's definitely, like, on an objective sense, that's true. Like, Gardevoir has lost the most pieces. There's also, like, this other angle you could look at it, though, where, hey, now you're not attacking with your draw engine, right? You're not right. sacrificing your draw engine as you go throughout the game. And I noticed this on stream when Fabian was on stream at UIC. Is you just always have like three Curlias on your bench the entire game, and your opponent, like, they're not targeting them down. They got to deal with the stupid Drifloon that's attacking you, you know? Like,
yeah, that's a good point. That's
so,
a really good point.
One thing that I really didn't like about Gardy in the past was you would attack with your draw engine and you'd go down to like these lower prize counts and you'd have fewer and fewer draw Pokemon in play. So then you were most vulnerable at the end of the game. Your draw engine was the least effective at the end when you're like getting Iona to low, and that's less of a problem now, so they have like more opportunities to put these combos together like over and over again.
Yeah that's actually a really good point. That is a really good point that I hadn't considered. So.
And the like every Curlia can always evolve into an EX, like you don't have to worry about splitting them to the different evos. Like there's something to be said, I think, about the deck in a way getting more straightforward by losing the other Gardy.
Very curious. Yeah, that's very valid. Yeah, I'd say that's yeah. increasingly valid. So we have, you know, seems like we've discussed a lot of the top decks. I mean, there's some Lost Box decks. Giratina did well, made a top 8 placement. We had some Iron Hands, which seemed relatively non-existent from what I was seeing on the floor. Not a lot of Iron Hands players around me. Lugia was present, but still just doesn't feel like at this point we've had a couple of tournaments in this format. The Lugia lists are not, you know, there's no innovation that's going to be happening to a Lugia list, right? And so the yeah. fact that it hasn't put up the results that you know, maybe one would have expected seeing the Fukuoka results, I think maybe gives us, you know, at least enough of a trend to say Lugia is not necessarily a tournament winning deck in this format. It just doesn't seem like it has the staying power to handle the big guys
yeah.
at the top. So,
agreed.
So I think that is a deck that you might get hot.
Close the door on it.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be a consideration for me at this point. I've thought in the past, maybe I could get away with playing a Lugia deck or recommending a Lugia deck, right? If you have no other play, if you've tried all these wacky combos and tried all these new decks and you just really struggling with certain lines because Lord knows the Charizard, there's a lot of lines in the Charizard mirror, right? You know, so if you're picking up Charizard, you gotta have a game plan into the mirror. You know, there's a lot of different lines with a lot of these top decks. And if you just want something where you could kind of turn your brain off and have a realistic shot to win, then maybe it's Lugia. And maybe, you know, you're seeing how Iron Hands did and you're thinking, hey, maybe I could get away with playing Lugia at my next big event. I mean, more power to you, but I think we're both in agreement, and I think Andrew would be too, that Lugia is just not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, of all of us, I've been the biggest hater on the Lugia deck, and I feel so vindicated after every tournament when it continues to fail.
Attaboy.
As it should.
As it should.
Yeah. So that feels great. We could look ahead towards kind of what the fallout is going to be here in a second. Before we do that, WW, I have a kind of a thought experiment for you. So to me, it seems obvious that Charizard is the dominant force that's driving the entirety of the TCG metagame right now. Like,
yeah,
Charizard is it.
Yeah,
it's the stopping deck. Point. It is the deck.
It's him.
Just the best deck, unequivocally. If you had the ability to somehow nerf Charizard as a PTCG card designer, including but not limited to errata, what would you do to make Charizard in a less domineering position?
Well, you gotta immediately go to the ability and not accelerating three. That's not a, you know, you don't want to nerf anything too major, but that would be something that I would think about, because accelerating three means that you can, you know, Iono-proof yourself in ways, right? You're thinning the deck. That's already a pretty big advantage of that ability. But you can also, you know, put two on a Charizard EX and then one on your Radiant Charizard, which you expect to use later in the game, right? As opposed to having to find that energy to...
Or the retreat.
Yeah, exactly, right? So there are all these kind of like little manipulations that you can get away with the three energy acceleration versus if it were just to accelerate two. Another nerf that I would give, honestly, the easiest nerf that we could give for the Charizard deck would be to either ban or adjust the damage of the Charmander. 30 for one. As a Roaring Moon player, that is extremely impactful. I'm serious, dude. Like, that is real. Just
prefacing that with "as a Roaring Moon player" is so funny.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, and the 30 comes up in other ways, right? You saw Tord a number of times in his stream. Charizard mirrors like poking something for 30 and that damage being relevant later on in the match. But you have a big tanky dude that is really hard to one shot. And then you also have this card that exists in the format that's pretty good and has a lot of tools that go with it in Roaring Moon EX that can one shot that arguably easier. However, it sets itself up to be just destroyed by a one prizer for a very minimal cost. So I think that is another kind of, just, again, extremely minor tweak. If it just did 20 damage for one, if we, you know, ban that card, like that might open up the game even more. And then the last nerf that just off the top of my head that I could think of would be the Charmeleon with the ability, getting rid of that. And that makes the TM Devo plays a little bit better. And the reason that I like that line would be just because any deck can play TM Devo, and the fact that you can't pick up the Charmeleon, so they basically have like they can, you know, the Charizard deck can play
always
around,
have guaranteed Charizard.
They can play around the TM Devo plays with enough foresight and just not needing that rare candy. I mean, that's really strong in and of itself too. So I think there's a few just like very minor things, but over the course of dozens of games of any player's tournament run, they're certainly benefiting from all of these. And I'd be, you know, certainly curious to hear your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, my first impression when like thinking about this question is the same thing that you thought of first, is if that ability was just like for two energy instead, I think that would be nuts, like in terms of changing just the flow of the deck, like being able to just rip those extra energies here and there. It also lets you get away with playing less energy, ironically. Like, the fact the ability grabs more energy lets you get away with playing less, because you don't need to have the energy in hand to retreat. You can always get it out of the deck and then still fully power a Charizard. Like, you don't ever really need the energy in hand, because you're accelerating all of them out of your deck just by evolving two Charizards. So it lets you get away with playing six, which is absurdly low when your attacker requires two attachments. I think, you know, you could make me make the corollary of that, like Burning Darkness could cost three. I don't think that's really in line with, like, the balance of stage two EXs.
Right.
It's, I think for 180 base damage, two energy on a stage two EX seems about in line with kind of what they've been doing with these other EXs. That's probably fine, but that could be, like, the corollary to that, is if you want to keep the ability, like, maybe Charizard itself costs more energy to accommodate for that. I think three energy on Charizard would be a little harsher, though.
Yeah, I just don't see that.
What being, I would aim for.
Right, right.
Like, because then you're going to play, like, eight energy, you know, now, consistently. That's just not going to happen. So I think nerfing the ability is kind of the obvious point for me. You know, you could get creative, I guess, and, like, have, like, some condition on Pidgeot or something. Like, you can't use it if X, Y, and Z other conditions are true. I don't even know what those would be, but making Cleffa cost an energy would also be a decent nerf to Charizard. Yeah, it's a little savage, though. You know, Cleffa did nothing wrong.
Yeah, right. That's the cutest card ever, I think.
Like, Cleffa's, I think, innocent in all this.
Yeah, yeah, but I think this is a good question, because it's just kind of saying, like, okay, here are all these little minute advantages that this deck has over... you know, many other decks, I would argue, right? It has just all these things going for it, and that is what, in aggregate, makes it as dominant of a force as we've seen over the last couple of weeks. It is, I think we'd consider it, you're either saying it's at the top of Tier 1 or a Tier S deck, depending on how, you know, stringent you are with your tiering policy. But it is certainly that deck right now. It is very dominant. It has lines of play into most other things. And it can even beat, you know, perceived auto losses. We saw Charizard smack around a Spothra again on stream this last weekend.
Spothra just loses to Charizard.
And you're thinking, like, that's got to be the crazy, you know, that's got to be the best counter card we have to Charizard. No, no, no. No, no, no. It doesn't quite
work. TPCI, or I guess the Pokemon company, is cooking right now. They got a Pokemon that for one colorless energy is going to do 170 damage as a grass type. I know it's coming.
They're going
to drop that stuff.
It's going to be Greninja. It's going to be the Greninja, but they're going to make an alternate form or something.
That's grass type.
Alternate Terra type or something.
That's what I've been saying the Terra types would be.
Yeah, yeah, they're just all like the same card, but they're all different types.
Yeah,
yeah.
So they're gonna release.
Yeah, that's the big news, is that the Greninja it's fighting now. It costs water energy.
It's actually every type.
Yeah, it's either every type or they release additional types. So they release a new Greninja.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
There's like nine different copies of the same Greninja.
That'd be sick, bro.
And you get one per booster box.
That'd be sick, dude. And you can search out any card, bro. Think about that.
I know. You could get your next Greninja to smoke the next Charizard. And then the Greninja wars get crazy.
The Greninja wars. Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, shoot. And then you have to counter. Yeah, you have to counter. If your opponent goes a Greninja against you, you have to go the weakness of that Greninja against you.
Or you could try and, like, play outside of that altogether and just have a Greninja that nobody is teched for, and it's just like no weakness whatsoever.
Dude, yeah, Dragon Terra. Do they have a Dragon Terra type?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be sick, bro.
We're cooking.
Imagine. I'm at Hyrus. Hyrus Pokemon.
I am, like, eagerly waiting to see if they pull a Mew VMAX on the Charizard deck. You know, like, the Iron Leaves is kind of in that, but it requires, like, multiple colored energies, so not quite. Like, the Iron Leaves feels like the Mighty Anna stage.
Yeah, yeah. We're in the baby stage that, like, just barely passes as a counter.
We're in the Mighty Etta stage. Like, we need to get to the Drapion stage.
Yeah, basic attacker that attacks for free. That one-shots a stage 2 EX.
That's right. Heaven forbid we get to the Spiritomb stage.
Well, it's all fun and games. But yeah, I mean, seriously, to kind of wrap up the episode, Charizard is that deck. And I think moving forward, we'll see more players gravitate toward. I mean, frankly, it is an interesting mirror. It has some of these elements of retro format. I played some retro format with my good friend Nick the other day. And, you know, you just have a lot of these big, wide benches of multiple different evolution lines. And that's what this, you know, this kind of new age Charizard is, where you have your setup Pokemon, but then you also have, you know, your Pidgeot, but then you also have your Bibarel, right? And they're both working in tandem to highlight the main attacker in Charizard. And you have, you know, maybe 4 different Pokemon on your field at any one time, 5 different Pokemon on your field at any one time. And it's like really intricate how this all works together. And then you have the text that you're trying to play around from your opponent. Maybe they play an Airy or a Devo, and it just gets really interesting. So I think, you know, certainly the better players have already adopted Charizard as their savior. And I imagine that more players are going to gravitate towards it, just being, again, that high tier, highest of tier decks right now. I expect that to be the trend, and you know, really seeing a 25 or higher percentage of Charizard, I honestly wouldn't be shocked for these upcoming regionals.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be surprised. Charizard has been clocking in like 22 to 25% the last couple of events. I would not be surprised to see that continue to go up, which is like tough to say when a deck is already that popular, but I think a lot of people are going to be convinced after seeing Charizard not only dominate EUIC, but Liam putting on a show in Orlando, the entire Perth regional being defined by Charizard. I mean, you know, you have to, even if you're not a true believer, you have to acknowledge, like, the belief is rooted in something.
Yeah,
you know?
It definitely is.
There's something there. Personally, I would really be eyeing up the Kaiwin Perth winning list. I think the Regieleki TM Devo combo is really, really powerful. It gives you some cool options in the mirror. So if you're looking to kind of explore how you're building Charizard, I think that's where I would start. You know, it's basically just a natural evolution of the Torrid UIC list. And yeah, I think I'm just a Charizard head from here. You know, I'm just waiting to be proved wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a ton of counters out there. And if you do expect a certain counter, there's actually just a ton of text that you could play in Charizard. You know, you think about the Mist Energy, potentially Euroscape, extra Charmeleons. Just there's a lot of different ways you can kind of build to accommodate for what you might expect from your opponent. And that is exciting. I mean, it's cool. You know, it's fun. You know, sometimes we don't have decks that rise up like this, where we have a metagame that's very even. I'd say some of the earlier metagames from this year have been largely like that, where there wasn't just this one dominant force, where it was, you know, you could hang with a bunch of different decks. Now it certainly seems like there's a clear front runner, and yeah, that's interesting.
What I'll say I like about this is I feel like Charizard does have an interesting and skillful mirror.
Yeah, I agree.
Which, if we're going to have a centralized metagame, I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, totally. Would agree. So learn your Charizard mirrors, boys and girls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it genuinely, like, you know, reminds me of some of these old formats. It almost reminds me of, like, Zork Galisopod almost back in the day. Like, not in terms of the exact tempo of the deck, but, like, a lot of thoughtfulness about where your damage is going and what attacker you use or what you've just thrown to the active on a turn. So yeah, it's cool. I think the game is in an interesting spot. Charizard is clearly the top runner, but that doesn't mean doom and gloom either, I think, is ultimately what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem, you know, so overpowered that it can't be beaten by other decks, but it just certainly has a lot of advantages that many other decks don't have. So with that said, yeah, that will be the end of the episode today, guys. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to get more plugged into the tag team ecosystem, you can go to x.com. Follow me at Real John Walter. Follow Riley at Smiles with Riles, and follow the tag team podcast at Tag Team Pokemon.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
See ya.